Greetings once again, my fellow man. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you with us. A little bit of an early preview version of the broadcast this week, as I'm headed out of town, and so we're doing the show here on Thursday night. And I want to start with news of the pandemic. That's right, we're going to announce the pandemic right here on the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take the events of the week and focus them through the lens of original thought. And you may or may not have heard about the pandemic, but I can assure you, it is serious. I'm talking about a pandemic of conservative and Christian leaders who seem to compromise on God's enduring commands against criminal behavior. I'm talking about the likes of National Right to Life, the likes of Focus on the Family, and other unnamed Republicans. And as I speak to you today, Bob Enyart and Ken Scott are in prison in the El Paso County Jail down in Colorado Springs, Colorado, for their participation in a pro-life protest, pointing out the hypocrisy of those conservative and Christian leaders who seem to have lost their way. And they didn't have to go to jail. They could have just paid a fine, but they refused to pay their fines because they refuse to give money to a corrupt and bankrupt justice system. And so they were sentenced to about a week and a half, 2 weeks in jail. And the governing officials there have them working off the debt at $50 a day, which is frankly an insult to everything I stand for and everything I believe Bob Enyart and Ken Scott stand for. So I want to encourage all of my listeners, every single one of you in the audience, if you think Bob Enyart and Ken Scott are worth more than $50 a day, if you think the work they do is worthy of $50 a day, $100 a day, $1,000 a day, I want to encourage you to write a check right now to Bob Enyart and write a check to Ken Scott personally and mail them to the KGov studios to let Bob and Ken know what you think they're worth. You can mail those to P.O. Box 583, Arvada, Colorado, 80001, and help us to support the people who are stemming the tide of the pandemic that seems to be engulfing all of Western civilization. So step up to the plate, all of you true conservatives out there, and I think they're worth at least $100 a day. $500 a day, Nate? Possibly, yes. Suppose it depends on where you sit and where you stand on a number of different issues. But certainly $50 a day is an insult, and at the end of their unfortunate incarceration, I hope that we'll be able to present them with income worthy of the time they spent in their jailhouse ministry. Now let's get to the news. By the way, you can mail those checks to P.O. Box 583, Arvada, Colorado, 80001. Make your checks out to Bob Enyart and Ken Scott because they deserve it. All right, now on to the news. We're going to start from the international file. A frog that constantly changes color is being worshipped as a god in India. Yeah, you heard me right. There's a gentleman there named Raji Kumar, and people are flocking to his house every day praying for miracles. There's a frog that lives there, and the frog was observed to change colors from white to yellow to gray, a dark yellow, and then it becomes transparent so that you can see its internal organs. And Raji Kumar, he said, "It seemed like a miracle to me that this frog has so many different coats. Now people come to see him and pray to him." Yeah, they're praying to a frog over there in India. And there's a professor there who intends to study the frog. He says it's a bit unusual. It's not that unusual. And the professor there is going to capture the frog and study the frog. And the professor doesn't necessarily think this is a miracle. But hey, over there in India, you know, it's a hopelessly pagan culture. And, you know, their religion is permeated with ignorance and superstition. And they tend to worship things that are even just a bit unusual. Whereas the college professor is like, look, I'll capture the frog. I'll take a look at it. But I don't think we're dealing with anything miraculous here. But so as Western civilization circles the drain, I can assure you that Eastern civilization has already slid quite a bit down, past the trap, so to speak. So we're not going to get a lot of help from the East. So we better get it together in the West before too long. Now, let's move on. That just wasn't as funny as I thought. Wasn't as funny as when I read it. Maybe it's because I read it the third time. I don't know. Anyway, not that funny. Speaking of not that funny, let's go on to news from the war. Dateline Little Rock, Arkansas. A Muslim convert charged with fatally shooting an American soldier at a military recruiting center said Tuesday that he doesn't consider the killing murder because U.S. military actions in the Middle East made the killing justified. Yes, this terrorist, he's a terrorist. This, to me, seems like the first act of Islamic terror on U.S. soil since 9/11. It's been a long time since the pagan hordes of Islam have been able to penetrate onto American soil, but it seems they've done it through one Abdul Hakim Mohammed. That's his name, Abdul Hakim Mohammed, and he's an American. Now, he shot Private William Andrew Long, Private Long had just completed basic training. He was volunteering at the West Little Rock recruiting office before starting an assignment over in South Korea. He was shot dead on June 1st while smoking a cigarette outside the building. And I'm sure that our liberal counterparts will insist on restricting smoking by servicemen. That will be their solution to the first act of Islamic terror on U.S. soil. We'll have to wait and see what they suggest, but I'm sure it'll be along those lines. Now, Abdul Hakim Mohammed told the Associated Press he admitted to his actions to police and said he was retaliating against the U.S. military. Yes, he says, I did tell the police upon my arrest that this was an act of retaliation and not a reaction on the soldiers personally. So I suppose the soldiers who were shot are not supposed to take this act of Islamic terror personally. It was simply a reaction against the United States military and the fine work they're doing subduing the pagan hordes over there in the Middle East. I have not seen this covered in the mainstream media as the first act of terror to be perpetrated on American soil since September 11th. And I'm not sure why they haven't picked up on that. Perhaps that's because they're under the spell of Barack Hussein Obama Barry Ho. They're just under his spell, and so nothing really gets through to them anymore. But you can trust us here at the Weekly Worldview to keep you on top of what's really happening, because we know what's going on. Or at least, we want to know what's going on, which makes us different than the mainstream media. I've got a story here from Sky News over in London related to Air France Flight 447, the airliner that fell into the sea. For some reason. Sky News tells us that two passengers with names linked to Islamic terrorism were on the Air France flight, which crashed with the loss of 228 lives. French Secret Servicemen established the connection on May 31st. They established that two names on the passenger list are also on highly classified documents listing the names of radical Muslims considered a threat to the French Republic. Now, Sky News lets us know that there is a possibility that the name similarities are simply a macabre coincidence, but the revelation, according to French authorities, is being taken very seriously. France has received numerous threats from Islamic terrorist groups in recent months, especially since French troops were sent to fight in Afghanistan. And this brings me to a theory that I've been formulating, and I'm not sure if I'm all in on this theory, but I suspect that there has been a policy amongst the Western powers that are fighting against Islamic terrorism, that there has been a policy that dates back possibly to TWA Flight 800, another airplane that fell into the sea, a policy of not giving credit to terrorists when they execute spectacular acts of terrorism, similar to TWA Flight 800, this Air France flight. I'm not saying I'm 100% sure that this is the case, but I would not put it past the governing officials to cover up certain acts of terror, and I'm not even sure that I disagree with the policy, if in fact that policy exists. Would I like to know your opinion on it? Sure, I suppose. You could let me know your opinion on it if you think it's possible that the Western governments are colluding to cover up certain acts of terrorism in order to keep the terrorists from getting the kind of press that terrorists like to get. It's just a possibility. But this Air France flight 447 falling into the Atlantic Ocean, it's just strange. I mean, I've flown hundreds and hundreds of times, and I know there are tens of thousands of flights every day. And rarely do planes just fall out of the sky. Very rare for that to happen. And so it just makes me wonder. That's all. I'm just wondering, just thinking aloud, just putting it out there for consideration, and you can decide whether or not you think a policy like that could exist and whether or not you might agree or disagree with the policy. I'm not sure where I come down on it. I'm still commiserating about it. An odd story here from the Times of London. An Italian woman who arrived late for Air France flight 447, she arrived late at the airport and missed that flight, has been killed in a car accident. Yeah. Johanna Gonthaler from Bolzano province in Austria, she missed the flight and she died in a car accident just a few days later. It is said that Ms. Gonthaler died when their car veered across a road in Kufstein, Austria, and swerved into an oncoming truck. Her husband was seriously injured. So, just a note to everyone out there is that 10 out of 10 people die. And just because you've escaped death today doesn't mean it won't be waiting for you tomorrow. And you need to make sure that you're ready for that transition to the other side. You want that to be a smooth transition, if at all possible. Now, I want to move to another story from the war, and this is just bizarre to me. I've already told you I suspect that there could be policies at the highest levels of government that basically are designed to control the flow of information in the war against Islamic terror. This story from WorldNet Daily just strikes me as bizarre. According to a Weekly Standard report by Stephen F. Hayes, a senior Republican on the House Intelligence Committee, the Obama Justice Department has quietly ordered FBI agents to read Miranda rights to high-value detainees captured and held at U.S. detention facilities in Afghanistan. You remember the Miranda rights, right? We've all seen Starsky and Hutch. Starts out with, "You have the right to remain silent." That's just bizarre. You have the right to remain silent. What is waterboarding for? Oh, that's right. Barry Ho doesn't agree with waterboarding. He doesn't agree with getting quality intelligence from high-value targets, apparently. Anyway, I'm glad we caught Khalid Sheikh Mohammed before Barry Ho got into office. Or he would have just been told, "You have the right to remain silent." Yeah. Now, when Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was arrested, he said, "I'll talk to you guys after I get to New York and see my lawyer." Yeah, and that's when they began the waterboarding and apparently got some good information out of Khalid. But those days are long gone. No longer. Now we're reading them their rights and providing them their halal meals and their Quran. I'm sorry, did I say Quran? I meant their holy Quran. So that they can have a nice time in jail and have nice conversations with their New York lawyers. That's not going to end well. I'm not liking where that's going. All right, now, this is a story from a file that I just made up, the Really Cool Stuff file. This is interesting. From the Jerusalem Post, a robot snake capable of recording video and sound on the battlefield is on the way to join the Israeli Defense Forces high-tech arsenal. Yeah, It's a spying robot, which is about 2 yards long, covered in military camouflage. It mimics the movements and appearance of real snakes, slithering around through caves, tunnels, cracks, and buildings, while at the same time sending images and sound back to a soldier who controls the device through a laptop computer. Isn't that incredible? Leave it to the Jews to think up stuff like that. Now, they're not the first. There's a Japanese fellow who's been working on this for quite a while. Shigeo Hirose, a professor in the Department of Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering at the Tokyo Institute of Technology. He's been working on serpent robots since the 1970s. Talk about the division of labor and specialty. What are the odds that on two sides of the planet, we've got a Japanese fellow and some Israeli fellows all working on robots that are like snakes? It's pretty cool. I think it's a great idea, and I hope before another terrorist attack takes place that they can be introduced to the robot snake. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. This is the Weekly Worldview. And I'm glad to have you with all of us here at the Weekly Worldview Studios here in beautiful Denver, Colorado. 1 mile closer to God, we like to say. And we're going to move on from the war into the politics file. And speaking of snakes, the Right Reverend Wright is back in the news. And, well, this mentions Jews as well. So, oddly enough, an interesting segue from one story about Jews creating snakes to eat Islamic terrorists to the Right Reverend Wright. And you all remember the Right Reverend Wright. That's the gentleman who preached hatred and racism from the pulpit for 20 years while Barry Ho and his fashion-challenged wife sat on their pews and let him baptize their children. Yeah, the Right Reverend Wright was asked if he'd spoken with President Barry Ho since Barry got into office. And the Reverend Wright, ever the one to make the memorable quips, he said, "Them Jews ain't gonna let him talk to me. I told my baby daughter that he'll talk to me in 5 years when he's a lame duck, or in 8 years when he's out of office. God bless America. Oh no, 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 no." All right, I'm not going to say it, but you remember Reverend Wright, okay? Anyway, he's rather upset. He says, speaking of them Jews, I think, again, he says, "They will not let him talk to somebody who calls a spade what it is. I said from the beginning, he's a politician and I'm a pastor. He's got to do what politicians do." And I suppose that he's implying that he's going to do what a pastor does, but... I would ask the Right Reverend Wright, what do you do? Because what you do is not what any pastor I've ever sat in front of for any length of time does. Spewing racism and hatred and conspiracy theories amongst your flock. Basically abusing the power of your pastorate. By the way, for him to say he calls a spade what it is that racist? For him to say that? Oh no, I guess that would only be racist if I said that. And I didn't say that. He said that. And then he also said them Jews, too, which, you know, strikes me as racist. But then again, maybe I'm just being too sensitive. Let's see. Is there anything else here on the Right Reverend? According to the Associated Press, in the interview, Wright also criticized Obama for not sending a U.S. delegation to the World Conference on Racism, recently held in Geneva, Switzerland, saying Obama chose not to for fear of offending them Jews. Them Jews again. Them Jews keep rearing their ugly heads at the Right Reverend. Now, I wonder what it is the Jews ever did to the right Reverend Wright to make him so upset. Oh, he's going to tell us here. He says, ethnic cleansing is going on in Gaza. Ethnic cleansing by the Zionists is a sin and a crime against humanity. Can I get an amen? And all the brain-dead liberals in his church apparently give him an amen now and again for tirades like that. I don't know if he's preaching anymore, actually. I think he's been retired. But he just hasn't learned to shut up yet. According to the Associated Press, the White House declined to comment on the right Reverend Wright, as you can well imagine. All right, now, we'll move on through the politics file from the Financial Times in London. Bad news, ladies and gentlemen. Break out your hankies. China and the U.S. failed to achieve a breakthrough at their latest round of climate talks on Wednesday, raising the stakes in the global effort to fight global climate change. Dun, dun, dun! Global climate change! Oh no, run for the hills! Ah, the sea levels are rising! Oh, they're growing wine in London. I mean, they're growing grapes in London. Did I say they're growing wine? Anyway, yeah. Anyway, what I was referring to was I read some history books where back in Roman times they were growing wine grapes in Wales. And I don't think they do that anymore because the planet seems to have cooled significantly. Anyway, I'm all for a warmer planet. I love it when the sun comes out. Let's see here. Back to the Financial Times story and the seriousness of the matter. While there are still months to go until the December meeting in Copenhagen that's coming up. Now, you remember there's a big meeting in Copenhagen where 181 countries led by the United Nations plan to work out a new climate pact. That meeting's coming right up. Just a few months to go here till December when that big meeting led by the UN takes place and the two biggest emitters of deadly CO2, they just can't seem to pull an agreement together. And the folks at the Financial Times are concerned that this lack of progress on the part of the United States and China is likely to discourage others, smaller countries, from making concessions during a pre-Copenhagen round of negotiations that are underway right now in Bonn, Germany. So they're having pre-Copenhagen conferences on climate change in Bonn. And they're worried there may not be progress, but that's okay because, you know, hey, as long as all the conferencees get to eat, drink, and party, that's really what this is all about, I mean, especially at this stage of the game. It's just a bureaucratic dance that they do. And the most important thing is the wine, the food, and the music. That's what they're really concerned about. Of course, eventually, they want to destroy freedom worldwide. But they will continue to eat and drink right up to that point, and probably beyond, because tyrants always eat well, even while they're destroying their civilizations. Until, of course, calamity is visited upon them unawares, which we can hope that the climate change nuts. We've just got to hope that, I don't know, that they choke on a chicken bone or something. We got to hope something happens to derail that whole thing, or we're all headed for the gulag. We'll all be working for the government. And I just don't want to see that happen. Not in my lifetime, not in my children's lifetime, not in my great-great-great-great-grandchildren's lifetime. Not here in the United States of America. Please, take your global warming and keep it in Bonn. In fact, I'm willing to keep you in a steady supply of Chardonnay and escargot if you'll just stay over there and shut up about it. All right, now, delving further into the politics file, this is a story I covered at the beginning of the week in the broadcast. My concerns over Barry Ho's suggestion that we need an executive paymaster to monitor the pay of corporations and businesses that are receiving bailout funds. Well, according to the Associated Press in a story this morning, Democrats on the House Financial Services Committee say the administration's efforts to hector the private sector into reining in executive pay may not go far enough. That's right, the Democrats think that only regulating the pay of people receiving bailout funds simply doesn't go far enough. And why should we be surprised? The Democrat Party is the Socialist Party, and it will turn into the Communist Party, and it's going to drag us all with it if we don't... If we don't wake up, ladies and gentlemen, they're going to drag us right down into the pit of socialism. And it's terrifying, frankly, and somewhat depressing, but I'm going to remain in a good mood. Let's continue from the AP article. The administration, that's Barry Ho, plans to seek legislation that would try to rein in compensation at publicly traded companies through non-binding shareholder votes and less management influence on pay decisions. Democrats and administration officials agreed that companies across the private sector need to adjust compensation practices to avoid damaging the economy. And here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen, I don't necessarily disagree with that sentiment. There's been a lot of companies that have done a lot of foolish things and have paid a lot of baby boomer morons millions of dollars to destroy their companies. But it is not the government's place to step in and correct the problem, because they're only going to mess it up even worse. What the government needs to do is let the companies that made those stupid decisions with those ignorant baby boomer CEOs, let those companies fail miserably, and then allow someone wiser to pick up the pieces. That's what they need to do. But no, they're going to, and you notice what they said, companies across the private sector need to adjust compensation practices. So the camel's nose crept under the tent with the idea of this executive paymaster. And now the Democrats are openly discussing regulating pay across the private sector, just as I thought would happen. Now, what do the Republicans have to say? Let's see here. While the administration has approached the issue with caution, a top Republican said the plans amounted to, quote, incessant government intervention. And to the Republicans, I would just like to say, sit down and shut up. Your gross incompetence and failure to stick to the principles that birthed this nation led to the election of the socialists. So please, we don't need any more advice from the peanut gallery there at the Republican Party. Just shut up. I've heard enough from you people. Let's see. According to the AP, the Obama administration has drawn a sharp line between the overall corporate world and those institutions that have tapped the government's $700 billion troubled assets relief program, the TARP program, the bailout program. So the Obama administration ostensibly says, oh, no, we're only talking about regulating those companies that have taken federal funds. But I can assure you that not only does the Obama administration have other plans, so do the Democrats in Congress. And by the way, we are controlled right now, dominated by leftist, communist Democrats in the Congress, in the Senate, in the House, and in the White House. Yeah. So what are they going to do? They're going to bail these companies out and then make sure that they can't compete for top talent. And, well, they're going to achieve their goal of destroying freedom throughout the Western world. And I'm afraid there may be nothing we can do about it. And now healthcare. For crying out loud, you'd think that Obama has a full plate destroying the free market system. As far as business goes, car companies, banks, financial institutions, lenders, mortgage companies. You'd think he'd be busy, but no, he's on to healthcare. Dateline Washington from the New York Times. After months of insisting he would leave the details to Congress, President Barry Ho has concluded that he must exert greater control over the healthcare debate and is preparing an intense push for legislation that will include speeches, town hall style meetings, and much deeper engagement with lawmakers. Oh, boy. Sounds like another recipe for another disaster that is in the making and the baking there with Barry Ho and his Democrat cadre there. Just scary stuff. The New York Times tells us that Barry has grown concerned that he is losing the debate over certain policy prescriptions he favors, like a government-run health insurance plan to compete with the private sector. What private sector? Is there a private sector left? I mean, come on, Barry. Give us a break. Could you stop and take a breath, for crying out loud? All right, now to me, what is the big story of the day? And that is Michelle Obama, again, rearing her ugly fashion, and I don't mean ugly in a physical sense. I've been told that I need to lay off her personal appearance, which is fine. But it's her fashion. She's a fashion disaster. Yeah. Now, there's a story from the Daily Mail over in London talking about Michelle, and it says that Michelle Obama's taste for restrained elegance has earned her the title of First Lady of Fashion. But Michelle Obama clearly felt something rather more outlandish was in order for a sightseeing trip in London yesterday. On a visit to Westminster Abbey, she wore a trendy, colorful tunic embellished with ribbons and fabric flowers. And I've got a picture of it here in front of me. I'm not going to put it on the web because I don't want to scare people. But I mean, it looks like an outfit fashioned by Big Bird on Sesame Street for Christ. She kind of looks like Big Bird walking around in this thing. Am I the only one who sees this? Am I the only one? Am I insane? Or will we know that the spell, the Barry Ho spell has been broken? We'll know that the spell's been broken when the media finally admits that Michelle Obama is a fashion disaster. Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and we're waking up from the dream, perhaps. Waking up from the nightmare. I'm not sure how you could Google this outfit that Michelle Obama wore. You could Google the term First Lady of Flamboyance. That's the headline on the article. Flamboyance indeed. Just eerie how the news media is, aside from their prescription medications, is under some sort of voodoo hex, some sort of mojo from Michelle and Barry Ho. Anyway, but hopefully we will wake up from the long nightmare soon. But it's not over, ladies and gentlemen, because there is another Biden alert in the media. Dateline Trenton, New Jersey. When questioned by the Record of Bergen County, that's a newspaper, apparently. When questioned by the Record of Bergen County about the Hudson River rail tunnel on Monday, Biden told the New Jersey newspaper that the tunnel is, quote, designed to provide for automobile traffic, unquote. However, the tunnel will only handle commuter trains that shuttle passengers between New Jersey and Manhattan. So again, Joe Biden just popping off, doesn't know what he's talking about, doesn't know what he's doing, where he is, or how he could have possibly got there. He thinks they're digging the tunnel for cars, and turns out they're digging the tunnel for trains. And Biden's press secretary, Elizabeth Alexander, says the vice president is a big proponent of rail, hair plugs, and plagiarism. No, I made up those last two. Actually, I just pointed those out. But she didn't actually say that. By the way, just in case you're unaware, officials there in the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area broke ground on the $8.7 billion Trans-Hudson River Rail Tunnel project. $8.7 billion project. Isn't that an amazing amount of money? Here's my prediction, is that not only will the Hudson River Rail Tunnel cost more than 8.7. I'm predicting it'll cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 billion. And at some point, Joe Biden will attempt to drive his car through it. That's my bold prediction for the week. All right, now, on through the politics file. I know this is getting old. Maybe it's too much politics. But some of these things, many of these things, simply must be brought to light. Now, I referred at the top of the show to Republican and conservative leaders who seem to have lost their way, and the fact that sane Americans who stand up and simply let them know that they've lost their way are punished and nay, even imprisoned here in Colorado. And here is a fine example of just that from the Associated Press, Dateline, Washington, D.C., former First Lady Laura Bush says she's pleased that President Barack Hussein Obama nominated a woman for the Supreme Court. Laura Bush said, quote, "I think she sounds like a very interesting and good nominee. As a woman, I'm proud that there might be another woman on the court. I wish her well." Can somebody get me another Prozac? Is this microphone still on? That was Laura Bush, ladies and gentlemen, speaking on Sonia with an I and not a J, Sotomayor. As if Ms. Sotomayor would have anything to do with or even accept a compliment from an aging, fairly dim-witted white person. You know? I mean, come on, Laura. What are you? You're not running for anything, are you? Oh, man. Tell me Laura Bush isn't running for office. Surely I'll flee the country. I just don't know why she's kissing up to Sotomayor or trying to act like a feminist. Oh, yeah, I forgot. She is a feminist. Yeah. Laura Bush is a feminist. Not unlike her her husband was and probably is. On another subject, according to the Associated Press, Mrs. Bush says her husband will have no comment on any Obama decisions. He feels that as a former president, quote, "He owes President Obama his silence on issues, and there's no reason to second-guess any decisions he makes." That's the living legend, Laura Bush, the leftover refuse of the last Republican administration. Well, at least George Bush knows his place. That's one Republican who has learned to shut up. All right. Now, we're going to jump into the domestic tranquility file. And this is a file that often disturbs me and it often disturbs members of the audience because many of the things that occur on a daily basis in this nation are simply shocking and unbelievable. And we've got a number of stories like that as we document the shattering of the domestic tranquility that our government is tasked by the very Constitution under which we live to protect. That is one of the fundamental responsibilities of our federal, state, and local governments is to preserve the domestic tranquility, and it ain't happening, okay? And case in point. Dateline Washington, D.C., from the Associated Press, James Von Brunn, a Holocaust denier who once tried to kidnap members of the Federal Reserve Board, is a suspect in Wednesday's assault at the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C. A guard there at the Holocaust Memorial Museum, Stephen T. Johns, was killed, apparently by 89-year-old James Von Brunn. You heard that right. He's 89 years old. He's currently being treated at a Washington hospital. Another brave guard shot Von Brunn after Von Brunn got off the critical shot against the guard, Stephen Johns. Why is he being treated at the hospital? That's a good question. I've been asked why he's being treated at the hospital, and I'm not sure. I'm not sure why. I think it's, bureaucrats follow... They follow their instructions to the T. And when a psycho, Nazi, racist murderer kills an innocent man, they rush him to the hospital. And I don't know. But indeed, he apparently is still alive. A self-described artist, advertising man, and author living in Annapolis, Maryland, Von Brunn wrote an anti-Semitic treatise and claimed to expose a Jewish conspiracy to destroy the white gene pool. He also wrote of a lifetime of seething anger. Now, you'd think that a guy makes it to 89 years old, that he would just wake up and thank God for every breath and try to find joy in every moment of his rapidly evaporating life. But that's not the case, as we can see by the example of James Von Brunn. 89 years old, still seething with racist and hatred and murder. And this is why God has to create hell, why God has to condemn people to hell. People ask that, why would a good God condemn anyone to hell? Well, Google James von Brunn and you'll find out why. Because if people like this were allowed into heaven, heaven would become hell. And James von Brunn has proven that even though he's been allowed to live for 89 years on this beautiful and glorious planet, and given every opportunity to enjoy life and to enlighten and edify his fellow man, he has chosen to be the quintessential evil man. And there's a special place in hell for Mr. von Brunn. And he's one of the reasons that there must be a hell. So if you've ever wondered why, well, there's your answer. Was there anything on this story? The Homeland Security Department called the shooting a criminal incident and said it does not appear to have a connection to terrorism. Now, I would agree that it doesn't have a connection to Islamic terrorism, but this is the definition of terrorism. To walk into a public place with a firearm and start shooting people. That's terrorism. An FBI assessment said that von Brunn is associated with right-wing extremism. And that's where I would take issue. This guy's not a right-winger. Right is right. Right is good. This guy has nothing to do with the right. This guy's evil. He's the opposite of the right. He's a complete leftist. He's evil. And he's the reason there's hell, and I guess I'm just going to move on because I don't want to delve into that. I don't want to get into that guy's psyche any deeper. I don't want to know any more about him. I know enough. Now, we'll go through the domestic tranquility file, and you can see that while Mr. von Brunn captures the headlines this week, he is certainly not the only example of our government's failure to prevent criminals from acting on their wicked and evil desires. Dateline Titusville, Florida, from the Associated Press, a 30-year-old nursing student has been shot and killed outside a Central Florida hospital. Yolanda Garvin Williams was shot several times early Monday in the parking lot of the Parish Medical Center. Detectives say they don't believe the shooting was random. No arrests have been made. Dateline Trenton, New Jersey, from the Associated Press, a 13-year-old New Jersey girl is dead after a drive-by shooting at a block party for a Trenton City Council candidate. Residents had gathered Sunday night for the campaign party hosted by Divine Allah, the national youth minister for the new Black Panther Party, who is running for city council. Police say a vehicle drove by and sprayed the area with bullets. The girl was shot in the back. Police say they don't have any suspects. What's the deal with the Black Panthers? I mean, they've been at the center of violent conflict since the 60s. And here we've got a 13-year-old girl in New Jersey. A note to folks out there, don't go to any party hosted by a guy named Divine Allah and associated with the Black Panther Party or the new Black Panther Party. The new Black Panther Party seems to be very similar to the old Black Panther Party, at least in the sense that there are bullets flying everywhere. Dateline New York City from the Associated Press, when an 11-year-old sitting on the bleachers with his baseball team grabbed his head and started crying. His family thought he had been whacked by a ball. Hours later, they learned he had been struck by a stray bullet. Yeah, doctors removed the bullet, which lodged between the boy's skin and skull, and he is expected to recover, thank heavens. But forget the foul balls in New York. You've got to look out for stray bullets circa 2009 in the freest country left on the face of the earth, the United States of America. Dateline Nazareth, Pennsylvania, from the domestic tranquility file. After arguing with his estranged wife, Daniel Ottenreitz kidnapped his 9-year-old son at gunpoint and led police on a 40-mile chase into the Pocono Mountains, then started a gun battle that killed him and a state police trooper. We don't know much else. Ottenreith was engaged in a bitter divorce and custody battle. No-fault divorce, they call it. No-fault divorce. And divorce is easy and cheap, but it still drives people crazy and makes people insane. And divorce is dangerous. Have I already pointed out that divorce is like the death penalty? Have I already done that? I have. Divorce is like the death penalty, and divorce is designed to limit divorce. The very nature of it is designed to limit it happening. Just like the death penalty is designed to eliminate people taking other people's lives unnecessarily. Just a sad story. Dateline Lockport, New York. Two teenage residents of a Western New York group home threw a blanket over a supervisor, beat her to death, and then fled in a stolen van on Tuesday. 24-year-old Rene Greco was murdered by the two youths, Anthony Allen and Robert Thousand, both of Rochester, New York. Lockport Police Chief Lawrence Eggert said, quote, "What's sad about this is the fact that you have a young girl who devoted her life to trying to make these boys' lives better. She's kind of considered their mother figure, trying to give them a better life, and this is her reward." Certainly a commentary on the institutionalization of guilty young men. Young men who are guilty of crime should not be institutionalized and watched over by women or anyone else. They should be beaten or possibly executed, depending on what they've done. And that would solve the problem. Dateline, Delta Township, Michigan. A Lansing area woman apparently killed her two young sons before committing suicide. The sheriff says the deaths appear to be murder-suicide, but that the case is still under investigation. Dateline, New York, from the Associated Press. Prosecutors say two New York City teenagers robbed and strangled an executive for a Chinese language newspaper as he slept in his vehicle. The teens entered David Cao's double-parked SUV in Queens early Saturday and punched and strangled him. Cao worked in marketing for the World Journal, which bills itself as North America's largest Chinese language newspaper. 17-year-old Chris Levy and 16-year-old Corey Azar are charged with second-degree murder. Dateline Worcester, Massachusetts. A Massachusetts woman charged with stabbing her 2-year-old daughter over 100 times with scissors has pleaded not guilty. Susan Johnson also tried to strangle the girl with a dryer's electrical cord. At last report, the child did survive, but just a shocking story there. Dateline Canton, New York. Henry Clagus II has pled guilty to 2 counts of first-degree assault. He's admitted to plucking Andrew Lesperance's right eye out with his hands and mutilating the man's genitals with a knife. Clegg has also sliced open Lesperance's abdomen from his groin to just below his chest. Lesperance survived, amazingly enough, after a lengthy hospital stay. Clegg has offered no explanation for the attack. He said he'd been drinking alcohol and smoking marijuana at the time of the attack and possibly doing other drugs. Dateline Hillsboro, Oregon. 27-year-old Karina Roberts cut open her pregnant friend's abdomen to take her baby and pass it off as her own. The body of Heather Snively, a 21-year-old young girl, was found Friday in a crawl space of Roberts' suburban Hillsboro home. The infant also died. Roberts was charged with murder in Snively's death and is under suicide watch at the Washington County Jail in Hillsboro. She faces life. Now, she's murdered two people, and she faces life. Now, it is life in prison, but it is life nonetheless, and it's frankly outrageous. Back to the story. Authorities had not determined whether the infant was alive when she was removed, a distinction that could mean the difference between holding Roberts responsible for his death or not. Now, it's unfathomable, ladies and gentlemen, a justice system so committed to their process that they'll overlook an obvious murder in order to remain true to their holy process, a legal process that protects by force of arms abortionists who kill similar babies in similar fashion every day. Waiting to see if she's responsible for the death of the child? Please. I mean, talk about being asleep. These people, you'd have to be in a coma. And finally, from the Domestic Tranquility File, Dateline Boston, Massachusetts, a high school football coach and another man killed a cocaine dealer to avoid paying a debt. They dismembered his body and cooked the remains. Yeah. Daniel Bradley of Westwood and Paul Mochia of Dedham, Massachusetts, pleaded not guilty in district court to murder charges in the death of Angel Antonio Ramirez, a construction worker from Guatemala. Mocha owed Ramirez $70,000 from drug deals and decided to kill him instead of paying up. Prosecutors didn't say how they arrived at their theory or how the body was cooked or disposed of. Cocaine dealer. Wonder if it was like rare, medium rare. Probably well done. Anyway, I'm no fan of cocaine dealers, and quite often cocaine dealers deserve exactly this. But, you know, I think it's the tolerance that our government has for the consumer end of the drug trade that allows this to just continue and build upon itself, and it just gets worse and worse. I personally would prefer my cocaine dealers medium rare. I'm Doug McBurney. This is the Weekly Worldview. As we close in on the end of the broadcast for the week, I will be heading out of town to try to earn a living this weekend. And so we're doing the show a little bit early this week. I hope everyone has an opportunity to listen in. And we're going to move out of the domestic tranquility file before I lose it here. And we're going to move back into the culture file. And I'm going to start with a story out of Arlington, Washington, from the Associated Press. A coach, a Little League coach, is accused of teaching young boys to steal. According to the Associated Press, a Little League coach in Washington State has been accused of using some of his players to help in a break-in. Snohomish County prosecutors charged 31-year-old George Spady Jr. on Monday with burglary. Court documents allege he took his son, a nephew, and another player from the team with him when he broke into a vacant shop. And he encouraged these kids to help him in a crime. And that brings us to our Bible verse of the week. A warning, 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 and danger, Will Robinson. There are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not tolerate anyone to dare quote a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. And we're going to go now to the book of Luke, and where Jesus said to his disciples, "It is impossible that no offense should come, but woe to him through whom they do come. It would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea than that he should offend one of these little ones." And this guy, let's see, did we get his name here? George Spady Jr. He's going to be on the business end of that verse if he doesn't get his act together. Because there's nothing worse than an adult who tempts a child to sin. There's nothing worse than that. God really hates that. And I really hate that because I follow God. I respect God's opinion. I appreciate the fact that he's given us his instructions and his opinion in his word in the Bible, and that it's something that can be easily understood by anyone who takes the time to try and understand it. And this is one of those verses that makes complete sense and lets you know about the character of the living God of the universe. Woe to him through whom they do come. Woe to him who leads any of these little ones into sin. It would be better if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea, which that's not a fun thing, I'm sure. And that would be better than what Jesus Christ, the Lord and Creator of the universe, is going to do to this guy if he doesn't get his act together and repent and claim the forgiveness that Jesus Christ has offered to all sinners. That forgiveness is out there, but you have to humble yourself. You have to admit you're wrong. Mr. Spady will have to admit that he was wrong in leading these young men to sin. And if he's sincere, humbles himself, and asks for forgiveness, Jesus Christ will forgive him. If not, though, It's going to be ugly. All right, now let's move into the justice file. Need a little good news, don't we? Dateline Wichita, Kansas. David Lee Gage of Wichita, who was facing nearly 30 years in prison for raping three women who had advertised on Craigslist. David Lee was found dead Monday at the county jail. The 52-year-old deviant rapist scumbag from Wichita had been in custody since August of 2008, and he had been convicted of raping three women back in May of 2009. Three counts of rape, and I'm wondering, how much does it take? How many women do you have to abuse and assault before the government will do what's right and tie a millstone around your neck or something like that? Anyway, he apparently committed suicide, and what can you say about the justice system in a story like, well, see, the system works, I suppose. All right, now, back into the culture file. Again, from Wichita, Kansas, abortion providers say that threats of more slayings from a man accused in the shooting death of a high-profile Kansas abortion doctor proves the existence of a violent terrorist movement coalescing around the abortion issue. Yes, Leroy Carhart, who is a late-term abortionist, who's a friend and, former friend of George Tiller, says that the guy who, Scott Roeder, Leroy Carhart says, Scott Roeder is a terrorist, there's no question about it, and I don't believe he's an isolated terrorist. Warren Hearn had something to say as well. Warren Hearn said, it's exactly the same as the Taliban, but the Taliban's 8,000 miles away, and the Taliban is too civilized to assassinate people in mosques. Well, Mr. Hearn, you obviously haven't been following the news. They specialize in killing people in mosques. Carhart says there's more than one lunatic running loose in this country that can be influenced by by religious rhetoric. I would say, yeah, there are at least two others, Warren Hearn and Leroy Carhart, devotees of the religion of child sacrifice, who've killed more people as an afterthought than Mr. Roeder ever thought of killing. They say there's more than one lunatic running around loose in the country. And there's more than one late-term abortionist, but not many more than one. Yeah, there's not many more than one late-term abortionist left in the United States of America. And we all pray for a day that our nation can peacefully come to a place where abortion is illegal and late-term abortionists have to find legitimate ways to make a living. We're coming up on the end here. Let's see. I can't talk about the trees. I can't talk about the college graduates and the fact that they're worried that they can't get jobs. I can't talk about the at-home gender test for you pregnant women. There's a test now where you can find out if it's a boy or a girl. They say it's 90% accurate. Anyway, down there in New Zealand where they release it, they're afraid it's going to lead to gender selection abortions. And that's just sad that a great technology like that could be developed, and we would have to concern ourselves with the fact that some women may kill their child because it's not a boy or a girl. Anyway, can't get into that. Now let's get to this, ladies and gentlemen. Cher is about to get a new son. Isn't that amazing? How old is Cher? 75? 85? How old is she now? Anyway, but it's not through traditional means, nor is it some kind of divine intervention. According to her publicist, Chastity Bono, the celebrity offspring of the singer and late husband Sonny Bono, is changing gender from female to male. The 40-year-old, known to friends and family as Chaz Bono, came out as a lesbian nearly two decades ago, and she intends to finally make the transition from woman to man. Yes, that's according to her publicist. Her publicist says of Chaz, that's Chastity, who at present is a girl, the publicist says he's proud of his decision and grateful for the support and respect that has already been shown by loved ones. It's Chaz's hope that his choice to transition will open the hearts and minds of the public regarding this issue just as his coming out did nearly 20 years ago. Ugh. That's no smooth transition, and it doesn't open my heart or mind. In fact, I just want to open the lid on the toilet so I can throw up. Just disturbing. Anyway, hopefully Bob gets out of jail in time to go down to Trinidad and intercept her and give her some counseling. That's the end of the show. I want to thank American Right to Life, KGov, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, Theology Online, and my other brother Daryl for making it all happen. I'll be back with you next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.